So glad you could join us on the Sixers Talk Podcast. We're brought to you by Wilmington University, Wilmview Works, Danny Pommels, Noah Levick, our producer extraordinaire, Ben Berry in the cut. Hey, it's one of 82 as the Sixers take it on the chin. We knew they wouldn't win all of these games here in this stretch of the Hornets, the Celtics, and the Heat. But they take it on the chin again, Noah, in front of the home fans. Now 8-9 at home, where it used to be a fortress. Really, I feel like a confluence of circumstances with the COVID stuff and injuries that have led to this home record. Sixers playing a lot of depleted games here in this first half of the season. But we'll get to the Ben Simmons stuff, of course. We'll get to Tobias Harris and his right shoulder. But with the return of Tyrese Maxey, Noah, not a triumphant one as the Sixers take it on the chin to really a more athletic, a team that can get out and run and kind of overpower the Sixers, this Hornets team. And Gordon Hayward had it going on, and B really tried to match him and go, blow for blow scoring wise with him, but just not enough support for Embiid and the Sixers to overcome that 20-point deficit that grew in the third quarter. You made some observations on the website with your latest article, three observations, as you always do after the game. Where would you start when you're thinking about why things didn't work out for the Sixers in this one?
I think just overall, as has been an issue many times this season, the level of play wasn't good enough for the first 30-ish minutes of the game. As you said, they fell down by 20 points, and I think there are many reasons for that. I think the perimeter defense, again, was substandard, and there were a lot of mistakes. And then I think in this game, there was a lot of pressure on the transition defense because there were so many sloppy, head-scratching turnovers. There's even one I described in that article as mind-boggling by Andre Drummond, where it's like right. A close game in the fourth quarter and your team's trying to make a comeback and he throws a behind-the-back pass, which is maybe charming when the Sixers are up 10, but less so when they're on the comeback trail.
And we've seen that type of turnover from him often here during
the season. It's characteristic of his play. And Doc Rivers has joked before about he's a courageous passer, said tongue-in-cheek, but you sure would like him to curb the adventurous instincts at that point in the game. So I think the turnovers, the transition defense, the perimeter defense overall, none of that was great last night. And as you said, Joel Embiid kept the Sixers in this one, but this wasn't an instance where he was able to carry them to victory, despite, again, passing 30 points, which ties him with Wilt Chamberlain and Allen Iverson for the most consecutive 30-plus performances ever as a Sixer, and doing it efficiently. Only needed 17 field goals, again, drew a bunch of free throws, but when the rest of the team doesn't play that well and there's not a ton of scoring support for Embiid and the zone defense, again, a little deja vu here with this Sixers season. The team didn't attack that too well. You got all those issues. Embiid, again, playing very well for the most part, just isn't going to be good enough to win the game and to extend that winning streak. But Doc Rivers was very frank afterwards and basically acknowledging he didn't like any aspect of the team's performance. And while sometimes coaches are a bit harsh after losses, I think that was fair enough. It was a subpar performance across the board.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
And even with Joel Embiid reaching, strangely enough, the 31-point plateau again for the fifth straight game in a variety of ways that he's reached that 31, playing through the fourth quarter, not playing the fourth quarter, getting 17 in the first quarter, all types of ways that he's scoring it. But, even though he's a tick off of that kind of efficiency that – particularly we saw Monday against the Rockets, he wasn't quite as efficient. he still goes out there, falls on his sword as if he's the blame or he needs to play better, as he said in his post-game press conference, just, again, showing that leadership that even though there are plenty of other places to place blame or and not directly, you know, relate the loss to him, he still goes out there and says, you know, I have to play better. I have to be a better player out there. And you do like to see that it doesn't, you know, erase the things that you, all the things you mentioned that really did result into the Sixers' loss. But you started your three observations talking about, you know, Doc Rivers going to that Twin Tower or Center City lineup with Andre Drummond and Joel Embiid in the game, trying to shake things up. And it felt like, you know, just listening to Doc, he had really, at some point in the game, he had acquiesced to the fact that the Hornets had more want to than the Sixers did, because he just talked about it so freely after the game, just saying, you know, you could tell their energy was better than ours from the onset. I was trying to throw, you know, Embiid and Drummond in there to really try to shake things up, as coaches try to do. And it did lead to some, you know, defensive stops, which they needed, but just too much of a hill to climb for them, too much of an insurmountable deficit for them to try to get back into the game. And, you know, you could start, like you said, there's a bunch of things you can point to, but you have to wonder why, you know, they were kind of due. They had won seven in a row. You come out here against a better Hornets team, a better team than many of the teams they have faced in that seven-game winning streak, and they just couldn't quite meet them at the place where the Hornets were running up and down and getting in transition, and the Sixers' defense wasn't meeting that. But what do you think the issue has been? Do you think I'm right in that it's just a confluence of circumstances with their home record where, you know, in years past they had been so stellar there that, you know, it just kind of like a bunch of factors have made it so that the home games have been games where they've been depleted by injuries or COVID protocols or just didn't quite have it on a night where, you know, the other team was just better?
I think I'd mostly agree with that. I think also, and this is to Rivers' credit and the team's credit, there was legitimately a massive emphasis on having better focus and playing better basketball on the road when he took over. A few guys have talked about, like, his first meeting with the team at half court in Camden. He told them, like, we're not going to get where we want to be unless we dramatically improve on the road. And the Sixers have done that, and they've actually been one of the NBA's better road teams this season. I do think, yeah, the disparity, again, now in the opposite direction as to what we became accustomed to, is a little head-scratching, and I think I'm with you. You probably have to chalk some of it up to coincidence. You know, maybe if you're trying to really read a lot into it, you could say they've been a bit casual, was a word Rivers has used, and lackadaisical to start these home games. So maybe they're just sacrificing some of that intensity at home. I think a lot of it's got to be coincidental that they've turned in some of these clunkers in front of their home fans and kind of flipped the script here. But as far as the Twin Towers lineup, Doc Rivers' explanation for it was relatively simple, and that he thought the team had played, quote, awful until then, and therefore, why not try something else? I just personally thought it was a night where it was more sensible to go the opposite direction, so put Tobias Harris or George Niang at center and try to counter the Hornets' athleticism in that way. But to be fair, the Sixers were, again, getting out-rebounded and again, not stringing together a lot of stops, as you mentioned. So it wasn't a decision, you know, not based in any logic. But I think it's certainly one open to scrutiny because it didn't work, because it was so unconventional, and just because he stuck with it for so long. You know, after 2 or 3 minutes, when it was clear the Sixers weren't really gaining any substantial momentum from it, I expected him to change. And he just stayed with that lineup, and the Sixers, you know, stayed behind by 10, 11 points, and Charlotte was able to hold them off. So not a decision that panned out, but obviously not the only reason the Sixers lost this game, where they didn't play very well, you know, in the three quarters up until that point.
We had the return of Tyrese Maxey last night, and he was asymptomatic and really just at home waiting for the negative COVID test so he can return to the team. Doc Rivers put him right into the starting lineup, probably looking for some of that magic that he had when they played Brooklyn, and he had those 5 3-pointers and was really Embiid's running mate there to take down the Brooklyn. That's their best win in that 7-game win streak. In retrospect, was it the smart move to put Maxey right back into the starting lineup, or had they gained some momentum with the wins with, you know, maybe Furkan Korkmaz or the hodgepodge lineups that they had been using? Did you feel like that was strange?
No, I did expect him to start. I think 38 minutes was sure a lot, even if Tyrese Maxey is never going to complain about fatigue and is, of course, in excellent physical shape, so probably isn't going to show much visible fatigue. That's a lot for a guy who'd only been able to work out a few times leading into this game and hadn't played a competitive action for a very long time. So for me, if you're going to criticize the approach with Maxey in his return, I just think having him play the most minutes on the team is a little bit odd. But look, he did not exhibit much rust in those early minutes. Knocked down a nice floater on his first touch, and then brilliantly executed a 2-for-1 at the end of the first quarter, hitting a 3-ball, then coming down, and I think with about 3 seconds left in that opening period, nailed a step back three, and the crowd was excited, and Maxey seemed to be in full flow. But then the rest of the game missed some open looks, and I think on one or two occasions you saw him perhaps not be quite as decisive as he is at his best, which of course is very understandable given the circumstances. And then I thought, you know, if we're being critical of his play, there was a contrast last night where the Hornets' ball pressure like was bothering the Sixers and preventing them from getting into smooth half-court offense, and that wasn't the case the other way around. Like, I think LaMelo Ball was often just walking the ball down the court against Maxey and getting Charlotte into their sets, and the Hornets were then driving and kicking and swinging the ball around the perimeter, and that's how Gordon Hayward got a lot of those open looks, where he made pretty much every single one of them. But for Maxey, I think the bottom line is great that he's back out there, was able to play 30 minutes without too many noticeable problems, and not the biggest deal in the world that his first game back, you know, wasn't his best game.
Were you like me, Noah, last night, where you noticed, you know, it kind of reminded me of some of those Celtics series when early on in the Simmons and Embiid era, where it just felt like Boston and particularly Charlotte last night just had too many athletes out there and guys who can, you know, slash and score from the perimeter. And particularly, you know, you look at like a guy like Seth Curry trying to keep up with, you know, what, you know, the Hornets were doing. And, you know, you're starting shooting guard, only taking 7 shots, not really having the flow and rhythm and giving Joel enough help to kind of overcome what, you know, Charlotte was bringing. It just seemed like they were out quick. They were a little out athletic and didn't quite have the interchangeable bodies like Charlotte has, particularly on the perimeter with Rozier and Bridges and LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward. They just didn't quite have the same firepower. And we kind of knew that, we knew that Charlotte can run and they were going to get out into the open court. And we know the transition defense is a weakness for the Sixers. But some of the half court sets, when they're running that motion offense on the perimeter, like you mentioned, and they're driving and kicking, and the Sixers just couldn't quite keep up with that style of play. Did you notice that? And do you think that that's something that could be continue to be a sore spot for them?
Definitely. I think the Hornets deserve credit for being a very good team that's playing very well right now.
They beat the Bucks in back-to-back games, so we can't let that go by without mentioning.
Yeah, and I just think their record is a little deceiving. I think they're better than their record, as is the case with a lot of these teams who have been decimated at various stages by COVID, as Charlotte was the last time.
And they didn't have Kelly Oubre last night either.
Yeah, they didn't have Oubre, but of course when the Sixers played in Charlotte for that miniseries, the Hornets were out without like five guys. So this is closer to what the Hornets actually are. Doc Rivers described them post-game as...
I think James Booknight had a day against them.
J.T. Thor as well. I had some nice moments against Drummond. But yeah, Doc Rivers described Charlotte post-game as kind of the East version of the Grizzlies, which is high praise, but I don't think it's entirely off base. I think this is a strong young team with already all-star caliber players in Miles Bridges and Lonzo Ball and some pieces that support them quite nicely. And also they exploit some of the areas where the Sixers are weaker, the transition defense. Like, they put a lot of pressure on you with these fast breaks and with Ball's creativity around the rim and kicking out to his teammates and the athleticism as well. I think undeniably the Sixers are lacking in that department, and you wouldn't really describe it as a strength of many players on this roster outside of perhaps Maxey and Charlie Brown Jr., who's got a two-way contract now. Outside of that, you know, many of these Sixers are more skilled than athletic, and it shows when they go against opposition like Charlotte. I think Curry had a rough first half in this game, got into a little bit of a rhythm in the third quarter where he found some openings and knocked down jump shots, but it's difficult when the Sixers have these like favorite sets to get him the ball, like that play where he makes the Iverson cut to the wing, and there were several instances in the first half where Charlotte just denied that play. Curry couldn't get the ball. And from that point, the offense, you know, looked kind of a little bit aimless and unable to generate any looks unless Embiid was pulling off something magical. So all of that, I think, is a bit concerning in a broad sense and does indicate some of the team's flaws. And I think we saw, of course, not a good version of the Sixers last night. So all of that was exacerbated even further by the lack of mental sharpness that Rivers pointed to.
Hey, it is 1 of 82, so no need to get too down. The Sixers have a back-to-back coming up, which they really need to kind of forget this and move on to what's next. And the Celtics don't represent as big a challenge as the Hornets or the Heat. So that should be a game on Friday at home. You know, fingers crossed that they can win, you know, heading into, you know, going on the road against the Heat. We're doing a great job of tiptoeing around Tobias Harris and that discussion. And I'm going to continue to do that for a little more because I want to give Joel Embiid his due. And we touched on it previously, as you mentioned, Allen Iverson, Joel Embiid, and Wilt Chamberlain, the only Sixers to have that 30 plus points through eight games. Consecutive games ever for the 76ers, a rarefied air to say the least for Joel Embiid. And, you know, we had talked about the MVP discussion previously, and, you know, we had talked about, you know, his prowess and the variety of ways that he scores. And that was completely on display last night. I think he had a dozen in the first quarter to go with some fouls, some offensive fouls that were hit or miss, depending on which angle you saw of them. But with his success last night, it also brought about the fact that he needs some help. And if he isn't playing at his very best, you know, they, you know, in a weird way, you know, the Sixers missed 10 free throws. Doc Rivers felt like, you know, even though they lost, you know, by the margin that they did, 11 points, that those really didn't factor into the outcome of the game, which sounds kind of weird because, you know, if they made those free throws, they would have been down by one or lost by 1 point. But Embiid needs some help. And in the past, we have seen them at their best getting that help from Tyrese Maxey, who has that ability to be dynamic with the slashing and the scoring from the outside and whatnot. I feel like that was really on display last night, the fact that Embiid needed some help to really kind of keep up with this Charlotte team I assume you saw it the same way on a night where he had it going on but just didn't have enough.
Yeah. Again, I think the whole night looks a little better if certain guys play to their typical levels, like Curry.
Yeah, a shot or two from a couple of guys.
That game. So, yeah, that wasn't a gaping margin, and many of the problems were self-inflicted, like we discussed with the turnovers and the ensuing transition points. So I think, yes, overall, it's generally like a fair criticism to say that the Sixers don't have enough complementary scoring in Embiid. They don't have enough shot creation around him. I mean, even when things were working for Embiid very well in that first stint, he was bringing the ball up the floor. He was generating shots for his teammates. There was one play where he tried to cross over the entire Hornets defense, which didn't end up panning out. So there's a lot on his shoulders, and that's not the worst thing in the world because he can handle a lot of it. But of course, you don't want to be in a spot, as you said, where anything besides the absolute best from Embiid is insufficient for your team to win the game. So absolutely, flaws with this roster, and those are in the spotlight more than ever because everyone knows what February 10th is.
And after the game, we learned that Tobias Harris has had now 2 months of shoulder pain that, you know, really has affected his game in a way that, you know, he said that it was something that's been lingering pain in his shooting shoulder. It was started back in November in the Utah game, and it really hasn't dissipated from then. He said it's something he can play with, but after the season, he wants to get it checked out and properly addressed. But you would have to assume that that's, along with the COVID issues, have really affected how he's played and, you know, his shooting prowess. Do you feel like this is something that the team can deal with? How much did you read into the pain being something that has affected his shooting or his play rather than just like a nuisance that, you know, all players have to get over?
I think it's significant. I think fans don't want to hear any excuses from him, and just so happens that he's had a lot of valid excuses this season, among them being the lingering effects of COVID after he tested positive and had a serious bout with that in November. And now this, and I asked about it because it just seemed like a weird situation to me where it hadn't been on any of these injury reports, and then suddenly you see right shoulder pain, but probable, which normally you see someone's dealing with like a painful injury for a meaningless regular season game. You assume that they're not going to be available to play. So to his credit, you know, I appreciated that he provided clarity on that. And dealing with this since the Sixers lost to Utah in November, that's a you know, substantial period of time. And he said it's something that he feels every day. So, yeah, that's going to be affecting your play on the court. He described it as irritating pain. So, again, it's not like excruciating or overwhelming or something he's unable to play through. But his level of play has been below his normal standard since then. And only he can know exactly the extent to which that has affected, you know, the three-point shooting being worse than usual and some of his other struggles. But I think it's fair to draw the conclusion that, yes, this has been impacting his play to some degree. Again, no one wants to hear anything besides him saying, I need to be better, and then actually being better. Sure. But one of the reasons he hasn't been as good as everyone hoped is because he's dealt with some really unfortunate physical stuff, and we learned more about that last night, is the way I see it.
37 minutes of play with that shoulder last night. I think it will be a great thing for fans to keep their eye on here Friday into Saturday with this back-to-back. how Tobias shoots, how he plays here, particularly knowing that that right shoulder has the pain in it, in this back-to-back. How does he look? How does he perform? What type of shooting numbers does he come up with? What does his defense look like? All the above. How many minutes does he play? Of course, no back-to-backs in the playoffs, but as far as getting to that point, continuing for the Sixers to make this rise up the standings, it'll be something to keep your eye on. A great segue into our final segment with Ben Simmons would be talking about Tobias addressing the rumors and innuendo surrounding him in the trade market. We talked about it on the last podcast. He has reportedly the Sixers have been trying to include him in trades with Ben Simmons reportedly. And how that pans out and what that exactly looked like, we're not sure because, you know, combined, that's about, you know, over $200 million of salary you're trying to move, you know, before the February 10th trade deadline. But Tobias took it in stride and really just talked about, you know, how the fact that this isn't his first rodeo, Noah.
He did, although he acknowledged he spent, I think his words were, too much energy on it in the last couple of days. So,
yeah, what does that really mean?
Well, I guess at a minimum, it means he wasn't oblivious to it. Like, right. The question wasn't catching him entirely off guard, and some things must have been in front of him, you know, regarding these reports that he's on the trade market to some extent. But he has been traded quite often. I think this situation is just different for him because in the past, he's been the guy where the team that acquires him thinks he has untapped potential and is excited about his future. And now the reason he might not be traded, and a rather strong one at that, is that it's not a contract that teams want to take on. So, of course, that's different for him, and he's used to handling it, but perhaps the dynamic here is a little strange where, you know, it's just uncertain whether he'll be traded because it's such a hefty contract. So we'll see how it plays out. If he does get dealt, he'll have to adjust yet again to, you know, a different world for himself and his family. And the human side of this is difficult and not something we should neglect. But for now, he is a Sixer, and you know, we'll see if that's the case in 3-4 weeks.
Yeah, I'm sure he thought when he signed this contract that he had finally found a home, that he, you know, found a place that he would be for a while and could build something here off the court with his family and him getting married, and on the court with pursuing a championship with this young core with Simmons and Embiid. But hey, it's an ever-changing league, as we know. And, you know, Doc Rivers also addressing, you know, the rumors and whatnot. I guess that was pregame, right? He talked about the rumors and, you know, trades and whatnot, and the Simmons situation as well, just saying how, you know, some guys handle it differently, so, you know, and how Tobias is handling it as a veteran. You know, it was interesting, like you said, that he gave that insight about it maybe wearing on him a little bit and him giving it too much energy. But we'll take a time out. We'll get your thoughts on some of what I just said after we hear from our sponsors, and we'll come back and talk this Ben Simmons stuff about this wonderful lunch between Rich Paul, Elton Brand, and Daryl Morey. Make your move in 2022. A Wilmington University education can take you where you want to go. Spring classes start January 10th. Apply today at wilmu.edu.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Noah, the winds of change could be blowing through the Sixers organization soon here. February 10th trade deadline, as everyone knows. I'm actually going to the February 11th game against OKC. My son is a huge Thunder fan, a huge Shai Gilgeous fan, so we'll be checking it out. Will this be a changed roster there on February 11th against OKC? Will we have guys who are still not with the team and waiting to join them because they've been traded and whatnot? Who knows? But as things stand right now, Tobias Harris, we addressed a brief minute ago. Doc Rivers talked about guys being traded and what that could potentially do to the team. And he addressed the Ben Simmons stuff and that, you know, what we learned from Adrian Wojnarowski was that the stalemate continues basically because Rich Paul, the Clutch Sports Agency CEO and Ben Simmons' agent, met with Daryl Morey and Elton Brand, and they had lunch somewhere here and they discussed the Simmons situation. It was cordial, it was happy, it was professional, it was businesslike, but nothing has changed. And are you exasperated? Are you worn out? Did you need to read that report to know that nothing has changed, Noah? I'm going to assume no.
Yeah, I think I can understand from the fan side, like, the sheer volume of quote-unquote non-update updates has to be a bit much at this point, and yet, like, we're obligated to report on it and discuss it because the implications of the Simmons situation are of course massive, both for the Sixers and, you know, a little bit for the NBA at large, and this topic that has drawn so much discussion and so many people are fascinated to see how it ends. I was at least, you know, personally glad last night that Doc Rivers was relatively open to discuss Simmons and trade rumors. He did note that Simmons has been at the facility. But he said he still doesn't know what that means as far as his potential return. And his impression is that Simmons is still no closer to returning to the Sixers. Again, not breaking news there. I think, yeah, there's been this stasis that almost feels like surreal here now. There's just fundamentally no movement in how the two sides feel. Morey wants the difference maker. Ben Simmons and his camp, you know, do not want him to remain a Sixer. And Simmons continues to say that he's mentally not ready to play for the Sixers. So here we are. But Doc Rivers was rather blunt, I think, in saying that he does sometimes address this stuff with his players and that he doesn't love when he sees these rumors out there. And he said he sees reporters speculating on trades or coming up with their own potential trades, and then that within itself becomes a story. And just essentially, he doesn't love that there's a lot of hypotheticals here. And for me, thinking about that, obviously he's exaggerating somewhat because, of course, a coach would prefer there to be zero true trade rumors around his team. But with Simmons in particular, yeah, this is an especially weird situation, and it's one that is especially lent itself to things being based more in theory than in reality, shall we say. Like, the bottom line here is what the bottom line is, and there are still no indications that anything dramatically significant is imminent. So here we are, and, you know, we'll continue to ask the main folks questions and you know, see exactly what happens. But for now, yeah, the non-update update, I think anyone who's been following this is rather familiar with that at this point.
I think for me, it is interesting the way the Simmons stuff is reported. Excuse me. So if you follow the timeline of what's happened, you know, Sham Sharania comes out with this report about, you know, NBA as a whole, but the John Collins information is mixed in there, and that Simmons and John Collins has been something like the Hawks have discussed or something to that effect. From there, we get Sam Amick from The Athletic has like a full-on expose with sources and, you know, some anonymous quotes and whatnot from people throughout the league tying all of the potential Simmons suitors and what could be a deal that they could put in place for Simmons. And with that, the quote comes out or reporting comes out that Simmons could be ready within a few weeks to any potential team he's traded for with a ramping up of his, you know, conditioning and, you know, game speed and that, you know, whatnot. So which drew a lot of criticism from some people from the aspect that, well, if it's a mental health issue, how can he just be ramped up to be able to be ready to play? Again, this is reporting. This isn't directly from anyone. But if you follow, you know, it's Brian Windhorst and Mark Spears from ESPN saying that they've heard that the Sixers are trying to include Tobias Harris in a trade with Ben Simmons. And then Shams Charania is reporting about the John Collins situation and the Hawks and them being a potential, you know, mate for the Sixers and the Simmons deal. And then the Sam Amick report and him saying that it could be ramped up. And suddenly, like, how can the mental health issues that he's feeling right now, which is keeping him from being with the team, the Sixers right now, how can that be suddenly dissipated by a trade and a new home and him being with a different team? And then on top of that, you have Wojnarowski and Rich Paul and Maury and Brand all meeting. So it's just a weird timeline. And you can see there's some strings being pulled behind the scenes if you kind of like, you know, push it all together. But I'm really hopeful this gets done before the February 10th trade deadline. I feel like it feels independent on which day that, oh man, the Sixers could win this trade. You hear that supposedly the asking price Daryl Morey's looking for has gone up and hasn't, you know, gone down or evened out as some people might have thought. So there's reporting on that as well. So it, depending on the day, sometimes you feel like the Sixers can win this thing and get that coveted, you know, superstar for superstar trade or all-star for all-star trade. And then there's some days where it feels like they're on the low side of it and maybe they'll have to just settle and won't quite get the value in return. So I think we all, just, like you said, just have to just buckle up and continue to ask questions and, you know, wait for something to happen. Do you ever feel like the window is opening for him to come back to the Sixers? Do you ever feel like there's a little slither of hope or some sunshine poking through for him to return to the team? Even, you know, people have said that from the Sixers' standpoint, and there's been speculation that way at various times, but what would you put a percentage or something on the idea that maybe Ben could come back and play with the Sixers?
I'd say not likely, not impossible in a world where he is a Sixer post deadline, which as I said on the last podcast, I really think is a world that might happen.
You know, where this lingers into the summer before the draft.
Right. And
free agency, whatever.
Right. If he's a Sixer and the playoffs are approaching, just the idea of a 25-year-old three-time All-Star like being physically healthy and not playing in the postseason is bizarre, but we're dealing with a bizarre situation. So relative to that, it actually wouldn't be that weird. But just him passing on an entire season, it would be exceptional. But like, I still don't want to neglect, you know, at least what we're told here that he says he's not mentally ready to play. I personally don't read too much into the reporting of, well, he might be ready to play in a few weeks if he was traded elsewhere. I just don't think that's quite enough to really jump on it as a huge deal, to be frank. And that's not meant to dismiss, you know, reporting from high quality reporters out there. I just think that in itself is not something that really should be blown up to be a huge thing. But yeah, anyway, with Simmons, it's really weird to imagine him on this roster, in part because they've constructed a lot of their identity around his absence. Like they're now a low turnover, Embiid-centric team that struggles to play fast and struggles to create trouble for the opposing offense and has a small backcourt and doesn't rebound very well. And, you know, there are just all these areas where, whether it's being stronger or weaker, like the huge story is Ben Simmons is not here. Then Ben Simmons suddenly being here would shift things to a great degree. Bottom line, yeah, doesn't seem likely to me. The two sides have been so stubborn to this point that just imagining one of them suddenly settling just does not seem to be in the cards. But hey, not impossible. Nothing's impossible in the Ben Simmons trade saga universe, I guess.
To piggyback on that, and he is reportedly here. It's just that we don't see him. He's been, you know, Doc has said he's seen him. He's been at the facility. Depending on, you know, how you read the reporting that's been made, it seems like he's still being fined, but they don't find him when he's cooperating or, you know, going through the team activities and motions and things that they put in place to try to help him get back on the court. So I think there's still that dichotomy of he needs to comply with what the team needs in order to continue to get his salary. And we know, you know, off the court, he's still winning. He's still, you know, he's engaged. He's, you know, spent Christmas reportedly with his fiance. They were photographed out, you know, getting ice cream or whatever. Like, it doesn't seem like it's affecting him as much off the court as he continues to live his life. And as a 25-year-old multimillionaire. So Ben's, you know, sitting out a full season or whatever, it does seem ridiculously wild considering where we were and who he is and, you know, the potential and the expectations that are tied to him. But, I mean, what else are you going to say? You're just waiting to see, you know, what happens, and we'll be here, you know, reporting it all. Anything lingering that we didn't get to, Noah, that you wanted to talk about?
No, I think that's about it. I think just from me, in part through hearing you and your perspective, I'm just growing aware of the fact that a situation where Ben Simmons is here after the trade deadline is going to lead to a lot of vitriol from the fan base, and there's not going to be a lot of patience or understanding if that's the case, even if Daryl Morey tries to sell it as the most prudent approach for the team. So, I'm ready for a storm of unhappy Sixers fans that happens, and kind of gearing up for that. Because as I've said, it really does seem possible to me. It really seems like Ben Simmons could be a Sixer for the entirety of this season. And if that happens, I now know that the large majority of Sixers fans are not going to be sympathetic to Daryl Morey's position.
Particularly with this tight Eastern Conference, the Sixers are a loss or two from being in that play-in situation. They're also a loss or two of being in the top three of the conference, or a win or two, I should say, of being in the top three of the conference. So just buckle up, Sixers fans. The saga continues. Follow Noah Levick on Twitter, and be sure to follow his writings and reporting on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. Doesn't get any better than his perspective on the Sixers and his covering of the team. He does an excellent job. And for Ben Berry, he's Noah Levick. I'm Danny Pommels. We appreciate you listening to the Sixers Talk podcast. We're brought to you by Wilmington University. Wilmu Works. We'll see you next time.